With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I missed it, Andy.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Good evening. Good evening, broadcaster. Good evening, Jamie Lee. Anywho, good evening to the people on the YouTube and good evening to the people on the Twitch, I believe it is tonight. This, of course, is the forum. I am your host, Phil Casey. And below me is, of course, Stephen Daly. And to this side of me is Andy Young. And down this way, is Ray Dicko. Dickinson, right? It's great to have the lads along tonight. This is obviously a non-season-based show. We have four topics of your four things that we thought about during the week. And also, I just want to celebrate tonight because tonight's the first night that Ireland's had its pubs open and its restaurants open. So you may notice that a few of us have had been out and celebrating that the few of the pubs and the restaurants are open. So that's the most important thing. It's great to see us all. It's good to see Stephen Dunne is in the house, Stephen O'Connor's in the house, Fran the Cheese is in the house, Kling Film, and all the good things.
And the other stuff that goes with it.
Indeed. Right, so tonight, look, we're talking about four of the most important topics that are out there, and I think we've done a good job in pulling it all together, and we'll try not to be too controversial when it comes to these debates, but I'm very interested to see how we start off this, because what we're going to start with tonight is, of course, the taking of the knee, and Andy, this is your topic, right? And I don't know which way you want to go with this, so I want to know what way you want to go with this. So if you want to go there, tell us what it is. The taking of the knee, because it is relevant. We've seen a lot in the newspaper, particularly around the English squad, particularly around Henderson's views on it, particularly around Southgate's. So what is it that you want to talk about with regards to this?
Yeah, I mean, the reason we're talking about it is because I'm surprised it's a topic of conversation at this stage. Like up to the week ago, I'd say I was wondering, was taking to the knee before each game necessary? And look, not that it bothers me, but because, you know, I see some players like Zaha not doing it because he doesn't feel it's enough. And I kind of agree. I feel sometimes it's a bit of a tokenism at this stage. And I wouldn't have thought that it was having much of an impact. That would have been my feelings up to a week ago. You'd hardly notice it. Like players go through their pre-match routines. Like they might be having a last stretch, prayer, you know, quick prayer, few shouts, whatever you're having. But like they've just been taking the knee now for the last year or so and off they went. But this week has shown why it has to continue. And not only that, but Mars, like I think Zaha's right. As a white male, and look, we're the same, all of us here, we don't get certain struggles. We have to support family, friends who do.
It's a great choice of diversity and inclusion on here tonight, looking at the
four. Four privileged white males on here. Absolutely.
But look, to be fair, we have to support our friends and families who experience different struggles for whatever reason. And look, looking at the response to fans being back in the ground and players taking the knee, if supporting your fellow people and witnessing an expression of support aggravates you to the point you find yourself in your 40s making an audible booing sound in public, then I think you need to take a very hard look at yourself. So that's my topic of choice tonight. I think up to a week ago, I would have been thinking the taking to the knee had kind of lost a bit of meaning. It was just happening. You'd barely notice it. But the response from the England games especially has been evidence that this thing needs to continue, and we probably need to be doing more. If this thing isn't being supported at this stage, what the fuck is going on? So open that to the floor.
Where would I go? Because Ray, it's your homeland, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's generally, yeah, because I hate the Brits anyway. So I was like, all joking aside, I won't give you my take, but this will always be trusted out as the small minority of people that are driving this sort of madness that's going on. But from your point of view, you've been around Liverpool, you've been around the people that were in Liverpool and the supporters of Liverpool. So how alien is it for you to see this type of behaviour carry on when it comes to the English national team, particularly around this topic?
Yeah, I mean, I've always sort of struggled to kind of wrap my head around being English per se in some respects, because I think people from Liverpool are a lot more kind of, the inclusion thing, I think, is something that Liverpool people are a lot more welcoming, I would say, than your average English British person would be my view. And obviously we share a lot in common with Ireland. So living in Ireland for the last 3 and a bit years has certainly opened my eyes even more so to the fact that I think, the society that I live in now is a lot more tolerant of people from different backgrounds. But going back to the whole kind of, taking the knee, I think in some ways it's ran and has sort of almost, as Andy was alluding to there, lost its kind of message. It's all got a little bit wrapped up with different agendas and different people throwing the tuppence worth in. I actually think now it's got to a stage where it would probably be, I think they kind of do similar things in American sports where you have a month or a particular week where you highlight a particular problem in a game or in society in general. And I think the game could learn a lot from how America raises awareness of certain things that are wrong in society and game. As far as I think you will always get a when you say as a minority, it's definitely bigger than a minority. And I think it's also a part of English British society that will probably never go away. Mm. I think it's so deeply ingrained, and it's passed, generation. And this is just a lack of education and awareness, unfortunately, that persists. And you're always going to get individuals like the one that we've seen on Twitter circulating booing as the knee is being taken with the TV behind him. Like, that is probably one of the most idiotic things I have ever come across on Twitter. It really is. You can't say it any other way.
What is Ray?
You're not on Twitter anymore, Steve. There was a fella.
This is sensational.
If you were to describe the type of person that would do this, it is that person. It's this baldy, overweight white male. Fucking.
That's it. From the fucking video.
Me, me, me,
He's the picture.
He has a tattoo on his arm as well, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, he does, yeah.
And his wife divorced him. The kids don't want to see him. He's back in his ma's house, and he's right in front of the TV videoing himself, booing as the players start their game. Yeah, like, it's embarrassing. But, look, maybe... No, not maybe. He's not a one-off. The fucking whole place was booing. And he's at home booing in his... ma's house, you know, waiting till she passes away, and then that's his house.
Go on. As an anti-social media, and I mean, I don't mean this as anti-social media. I'll take that mantle later on.
Non-social media, yeah. I suppose I have a few views on it. When Ray was talking about England there, it is an imperialist colonial country, and that's going to take so many generations. In the history of the country, it's really not that long ago that they were still conquering people. They still have a dominion. They still have a commonwealth. There's still, you know, a huge faction of the country that believe ultimately there's a superiority complex there. And that's going to take time to dilute, and it needs to be diluted. It can't be eradicated. It needs to be diluted, you know, generation by generation. That will happen as there's more diversity, as younger kids come along and refuse to accept the right wing side of things. It'll only happen with a couple of things though, because socioeconomic issues create right wing policies and right-wing rhetoric. So there's that side of it. You've got a prime minister who refuses to come out and condemn it. It's the easiest thing in the world to do, to just come out and condemn it. There's no reason not to, yet he doesn't do it. In terms of the taking the knee, I think it's a very personal thing. And, you know, if Zaha doesn't want to do it or other players don't want to do it, it's completely up to them, because they don't feel it's enough. But I don't think there's... I think that's, in a way, I think that's okay for a black person to do, or a person of color to make that decision. I'm nearly, you know, it's an awkward one for the white footballers to not do that, because immediately they're racist, regardless of whether they feel it. They may not feel the knee is enough, and they feel that more needs to be done for it. But if they don't take the knee, they're going to be labeled as a racist. There's that side to it as well. So they kind of just have to row in behind what their teammates feel is right. Their teammates who are people of color and minorities and stuff like that. But I suppose, yeah, it's an education thing, isn't it? It really is about education and inclusion. And you look at, I'm going to pick somewhere like Burnley, you know, and it's not a reflection on Burnley as the only place, because I don't know enough about it. But let's pick somewhere like Burnley. You even look at their football team. The diversity in their football team is completely lacking. You know what I mean? It's what you would, you know, describe as you know, a typical 80s football team, for the most part. And maybe somebody will pick me out and say, oh, they've you know, two black players or something like that. But I'm just using, there's pockets of this around. Brexit showed that. The Brexit debate and the Brexit voting showed there's pockets of this. And it comes, you know, it's very Trumpist as well. And I don't want to get too political on this, but you look at they've kind of figured out that the white, what used to be middle class man, but he's now lower middle class man, is the most vulnerable or most threatened demographic in America, because they're no longer the top of the food chain. And they feel very vulnerable. They feel attacked, and fear creates racism. Racism is created by lack of education and fear. If you think somebody else is coming in to take your job or steal your patch or, you know, get the upper hand on you, and you're not comfortable in yourself as a person, then it's impossible, I think, for you to be inclusive. I think in order to, you have to understand yourself and understand and be comfortable with yourself before you can be inclusive. And a lot of those people, those lads at those football games, we can all castigate them, but there's something going on with them that's making them do that. And I'm not excusing it for a moment, but there's no one's looking into why the racism is not being diluted enough and not
can I just address a couple of comments? So Free World says, when you're doing something for just the sake of it, you lose the overall message, and it's always difficult to mix politics with sport because the opinions will vary across people. Okay, I kind of agree with the first part of that statement, that it had lost its message. But the second part about politics, I don't agree with, because I don't think equality is political. At this stage, we have all voted democratically in all sorts of equality movements, you know, in Ireland and in England and in Europe. So it's not political. Equality is not politics. Where we've reached a stage where it's not. And sorry, Phil, I know you're dying to jump in.
No, I am. And I'll tell you why, because it actually addresses... No, but listen
just,
to me.
Just for a second.
Andy, it addresses an awful lot of this, right? So the taking of the knee originally, I got annoyed about it because the taking of the knee was a specific response by Colin Kaepernick to how to protest against police brutality in America on, off the back of being respectful to of doing something towards the national anthem and the flag, which wouldn't be disrespectful in a way or a mean. So it meant that he could, before every game in the NFL, they played the national anthem. Hmm. And he didn't want to turn his back on it, sit down or walk off the stadium. But he wanted to do something as a marker, protest, but also respect. And what he did was he engaged with the U.S. Marines to ask them what was the most respectful thing he could do as a marker prospect protest, which wouldn't actually be something that was disrespectful to the flag. So he took the. They told him to take the knee. Okay. So they said, what you can do is you can still do it without standing up for the flag. You can still hold your chest and take the knee. If you look at Kaepernick, he's actually on his knee, holding his heart in the same manner, but it was an act of protest while being respectful towards what was going on. My biggest problem with taking the knee was that when the initial impact was huge in that the players, when you saw people taking a knee around the world in every sport, it was like the black fist and the black fist from the 70s in terms of the Olympics and the 60s when it was about the black protest in terms of equality. Forget about just Black Lives Matter and stuff. This was about equality in terms of having the same rights to the people that they lived with. And I'm not talking about white people. I'm just talking about anyone that wasn't black, right? So that was huge. And that vision and that viewpoint that people still have, we still think of the Olympics. I can't remember, and this is a shame on me, but I can't remember the Olympics where Jesse Owens is standing there with the fist clenched and he's holding it aloft as a marker protest. And that was brilliant. What happened, and where I was there going, it's time now for them to step up. And I don't mean black players. I'm talking about footballers. I'm talking about sports people in general. It's like the Naomi Osaka thing, to make their voice felt and make their voice heard more than just taking a knee. Because to allow racists to come back into this, to say that they're booing this because it's not having an impact, is disgusting. Because they're trying to make a stand. They're trying to ensure that what's going on is held in the mind of people that are in front of them, that's there. And it's something that's insane that you think that when people are trying to stand up for the right thing to happen in society, and it's gone beyond Black Lives Matter. This is about equality as a whole. And I'll take your point, Andy. This is about equality as a whole. This isn't about just black or white or yellow or green or red or orange or purple people. This is about equality as a whole. Footballers are trying to go beyond what their normal remit was, which was to be stupid in front of a camera and to say what was going on. I accept Olivier's point in the comment that the knee thing seems to be something that's going on, right? But the racists and the white supremacists and the right wingers that are going on at the moment, I take up the Trump argument around this. And it's what's happened with the booing, is that it's been disrespectful and it's not being heard. I'm sorry, but these people that are being impacted by this for generations have tried to speak out and tried to do the right things. And it's like what's happened with the Hillsborough thing during the week, where they've done everything right. They've followed the rules. They fought like fuck to get where they needed to be. And when they got there, the system let them down. So if the system doesn't work for you anymore, you have to stop believing in the system. You have to do something more. And I want to see players do more. I actually don't want to see the knee. And that's not because I agree with you that if it's annoying the racists that much, keep doing it, right? But I'd like to see them do a bit more. There was a mention by Muhammad Yogi in the comments a couple of seconds ago, and I'm on board with this. I would love, if you want to see a proper protest, I want to see the English team turn their gear to an all-black kit for the course of the Europeans. The Euros, right? Yeah. I think something big, something massive, particularly in a society that's a country that's as racist as the English. There's a lot of English people I know that aren't racist, but you look at what's going on with Brexit, what's going on with this type of stuff, right? There's a huge amount and a percentage of the population that feel this way and feel so disenfranchised because they spend their time reading the Daily Mail and the Sun, right? That's what they get their media
and in. Facebook.
And Facebook. And yeah. that's what they're listening to. And Phil, if that's what your guidance point is, you're banjaxed. So it's time now that not only do we take the knee, but do something incredibly out of the box. And I will say, I think Southgate's a terrible manager, but for what he came out and said with Jordan the Week, and for what Jordan Henderson has come out and said with Jordan the Week, I'm disgusted by Roy Keane's comments about Henderson not being a leader. The fact that those people stood up and have showed true leadership in terms of what goes on, that's disgusting.
Right? Yeah. We talk about leadership a lot on this podcast, because Klopp's leadership and Henderson's leadership on and off the pitch is phenomenal. Like, we're witnessing two very unique characters that will be recognised far beyond now of how powerful their leadership is. Henderson is there at the forefront of everything for people, for fans, for everything. And he doesn't just pick silly topics. And Klopp is all about humans and the inclusion and sport. And this is all about us as fans. Look, Brian Murphy, I respect Brian's opinion. He's here most nights. He's on Twitter, always engaging with us. But he says everyone has the right to protest about whatever they want. People can take the knee. People can be against it. This demonization of people for their opinions is ridiculous. But again, I'll get back to it. This isn't about an opinion, that right or wrong. This is about equality. There's no right or wrong. It's not political. It's equality. As long as people are oppressed in this day and age, you know, we have to stand up for it. And it's very easy for us to say that haven't experienced oppression, but we're all related to people that have experienced oppression or some sort of inequality, like women, like gays, like foreign nationals, like people of different religions. We have to stand up for our people. We work with them. We're friends with them. They're our family. It's not political. Equality is not political. Stop calling it political. Political is when we haven't quite worked out what the right direction is with a policy, or we haven't quite worked out what is right or wrong.
Or when you're trying to gain an advantage from an opinion.
Yeah.
You're right, Andy. It is. I was going to pick up on Brian's comment there, and I don't know him, and I know you guys are on a lot more than I am. But I don't think anybody gets to have the opinion of being racist. And that's just the long and short of it. That game, was that game at home the other night for the England match? Was it?
Yeah, it was in Borough Stadium.
It was up in the Riverside. Okay.
Yeah.
So they would have had the details of every single person sitting at that, sitting in that ground. There wasn't a full stadium, and they have cameras in every angle of a stadium now. They could have easily picked out who was doing what, and they have chosen not to, because that is racist abuse. It is. and the people who don't feel equality matters can often say, oh, it's gone mad, it's gone this, it's gone that. You've never been on the end of that. You've never stood there trying to do your job, which is playing football in this instance, and have a feeling of having been undervalued and oppressed and whatever else for your entire life, probably. And then have people boo your viewpoint, which is a perfectly rational and should be just common sense viewpoint, which is equality for everyone, you know? Mm. So how they weren't able to do something about that, or didn't have the appetite to do something about it, is a sign of why things won't change.
Yeah. Red Steve says, what do the Irish know about oppression? And the ironic comment there, like, you know, and look, it's a very good example of how people have been oppressed in recent history. And this is mad.
Now
I would say Irish people abroad, especially in the UK, are experiencing way less oppression than they did in the past. Like that thinking has definitely changed. Or
Kumar there says, have you guys ever been racially abused? And like, I have, but I never took it as that, because it was somebody in Liverpool at 2 o'clock in the morning saying, you plastic paddy, fuck off, back on Ryanair. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It meant nothing. You know, it meant nothing to me, because I was fucking off back on Ryanair, actually. But in reality, it's just not the same. We're so far beyond, I think, we're so far beyond being racially.
Yeah, I think we are. The days of no Irish, no dogs is long gone. Irish people are ruling the world. You know, there's Irish people in America, dominated cities in America. They built cities.
Even when they were doing that, there was still a massive amount of oppression. Like only in the 50s and 60s in England were the Irish still being castigated, probably up to the 80s, realistically, you know. So I know what you're saying about us having proliferated the globe in terms of you know, the impact we've had. But it's not the same. It's not the same. You know?
Yeah, we wouldn't even go there. Now, what will be interesting will be what is next in terms of, you know, the awareness campaign. Will they stick to it? Taking the knee at the start of next season, and then if they do, it's probably that they would stick with it for the rest of the season, or will they come up with something a little bit, you know, bring it on in terms of some other kind of visual kind of awareness rather than taking the knee. It's going to be interesting whether this is here forever or whether it disappears at the start of next season.
Look, they are displays of support, expression of support for people that we are friends with. We are, you know, there are our families, and it's time to start excluding people that aren't for equality in all walks of life. That's, and like people saying sport and politics, like, look, even if you did believe it's political, which it's absolutely not, equality is not political, it's just, where's Phil gone? It's absolutely not, but sport is too big of an opportunity, it has too big of a platform for not to use it as a way to drive what's right and what's wrong in the world. You know, where it's 2021 and you've got people in their living rooms spewing, you know, who are 40 or 50 years of age, that people are only trying to show support for their fellow man and woman. It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, and I see a few comments coming up the side there, and I'm sure Dicko will agree with me. You know, Scousers aren't, you know, completely absolvable of this either. You know, it might be a more inclusive society in Liverpool than it is in other parts of England. But somebody said, we're Scousers, we see no colour. That's bollocks as well. There's plenty of racists in Liverpool. There's plenty of racists in Anfield. There's plenty of racists in Goodison. Let's not go absolving ourselves and pointing the finger to everybody else. In the same way, there's plenty of racists in Dublin and in Ireland. And that's just the fact. There's no getting away from it. And there'll even be just institutional racism that people don't even realize they're being racist. Yet they are, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. I this isn't anyone I know personally, but I was told of someone who, when John Barnes joined the club, he actually gave up his season ticket. Because of that, at that time, you know, and you know, that's relatively recent history. Refused to go back after Liverpool signed John Barnes. So, you know, you're right. It's this. I know we're what 30 odd years away from that, but you know, it's a pretty horrific example when you think back to it.
Yeah,
but Stephen
Dunn is a great comment. We're all racist, whether we like it or not. We just have to educate ourselves and try to become anti-racist. And look, that is probably the most. it's a comment that we all have to just accept and face up to the reality of it. Do you remember John Barnes was on Big Brother? And he spoke out about how he was, he felt homophobic,
and he got slaughtered.
He got slaughtered, but he held his hand up, right, and admitted to having these deep, ingrained thoughts. Ooh. You know what I mean? How he felt against homosexuality, because he was brought up that way. And if you're brought up in a white society, you're going to have these preconceptions, and these thoughts have to be challenged. And it's all about education. There's loads and loads and loads of content. I'm glad we're such a good... I just
want to jump, because this is something that
you're just barking me down all the comments. I'm not barking you down.
What I want to say to you is because there's these words that get thrown out all the time, is that people always use racist, and the problem for me is that it's not racist, because racist is a label. And if you want to be truly tolerant and equal, you've got to understand, and I totally get people have different opinions, and as soon as you have a different opinion, it doesn't make you racist. As soon as somebody says that somebody is something, it's all of a sudden you're racist. No matter, even has nothing to do with race, people go to that war because they want to apply a label to what's going on. And even John Barnes has said this himself, is that it isn't necessarily racist behavior. It's not about being racist. It's about what you've grown up around. Like, we've talked, and I talk with Pete off this, and Pete's I grew up with Pete, and we talk about what was racist in the 80s compared to what is racist now. And if you think of what was racist in the 80s compared to what is racist now, they are so, 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 so far away from what that used to be, right? Because what was acceptable then is nowhere near acceptable what's now. And it's moving in the right way. I'm not saying anything is wrong in terms of what's going on and what's going on there. But racism as a shout needs to be almost classified as to what's xenophobic. People have forgotten the word xenophobic and xenophobia, because that's about country and nationality and all that type of stuff. It's not necessarily racism. What is about skin? What is about religion? What is about ideas? What is about thought? Everything has become such a simplistic label to throw racism on when we go there, right?
Yeah, but the English language just doesn't go beyond certain labels. I mean, like, just because you've had a racist thought, or you know, your opinions need to be challenged, it doesn't make you criminal. But going back to Stephen's comment, we have to accept these things.
Yeah.
Like, these are people. These are things we need to own up to. And going forward, we need to try and educate ourselves. And look, part what wrecks my head about like Twitter. Look, we're always on about it. It's not the real world, but people use these divides as a way to shame others. You know what I mean? You're never going to solve equality problems by trying to shame others. Like, there's no point in throwing stones at somebody just because they were wrong on a matter that's racist or not. Like, you can hold your hand up and say that you were wrong. You know, you were wrong about how you felt about a topic or another. But Phil, there's no point in splitting hairs. Like, it is racist. It is racist, you know, as much as anything. Go on.
No, my point is, Andy, yes, what's racist is racist, okay? I've seen so many people shut down for saying the simplest of things that had nothing to do with race. I've seen so many times being put up there because...
But that's shame, and that's this bollocks shaming thing.
This is what I'm saying.
Can I jump in there for a second?
Yeah.
Because I'm going to open a bit of a can of worms, probably on myself. We all know an incident that happened a few years ago with me specifically on Twitter, right?
Oh, we do.
And if we look back on it now, at the time I was very, very vehement around the fact that it wasn't racist. And of course the intention wasn't racism. But I can quite easily see how the comments that I made at the time were picked up as racist by the person in question.
Yeah.
Would I make those comments now, even if I was friendly with the person? No, I wouldn't. Did I at the time? Yes, I did. And we all backed me. And because everybody backed me because you knew fundamentally I wasn't racist.
You weren't racist. Yeah.
And I was saying it in jest. But we didn't put ourselves in the position of that person receiving those comments on a public forum for a laugh. You know, and that's the reality of the situation now. So what I'm saying is, I get the shaming element, but whenever we think of people going out to what I don't like is when other people jump on the bandwagon to call you a racist, you know, or someone a racist, if it hasn't offended the actual person in question. But in the instance of me, it did offend the person in question. And I apologize immediately, you know, privately. Yeah. But that doesn't change anything. It still understands why that person felt that comment was racist.
And look, you know, I recall that that incident very, very vividly. And she did kind of accept your apology, but it was the hysteria that was built up around that, and the amount of shame and that everybody went. People went to huge lengths to make you out to be a massive, massive racist. Now you made a poxy comment, which at the time probably felt funny. And you probably thought that it might have been received better than it was.
Yeah.
And it was a mistake, and everything was fine between yourself and the other party.
I don't think it was fine between them. They didn't accept the apology. And you know, that created tension right the way through. And I doubled down on it for a small period of time where I was absolutely adamant that, you know, it wasn't racist. But looking back on it now, it was a comment that would quite easily be deemed as racist. And you know, I've tried over the last couple of years especially to do a lot of work in terms of just understanding more and just, you know, watching more things and trying to understand the viewpoint of people who are in this situation. Because you can't put yourself in that situation because you haven't experienced it, you haven't felt it until you actually educate yourself. And I you know, when I was making those comments, the last thing I was doing was educating myself around what other people of color were feeling. You know, now I genuinely do. I'm literally paused something that I'm watching on Netflix. Now it's a program around food, but it's based on the cultural roots of American food around black culture and it coming from Africa over and stuff like that. And, you know, you're watching stuff whereby, you know, Jefferson and fucking Washington had plantations of black people whilst being seen as these founding fathers of America, and they're celebrated every year, you know, and it's this juxtaposition throughout history whereby in the moment we feel we're not racist, but as we educate ourselves, or not just you, take racism out of it, whatever the issue might be.
Yeah.
The more we educate ourselves, the more we can go back and look at our own behavior, because we can only control our own behavior. And the more we educate ourselves, the more we can go back and look at our behaviors and try and learn from our own behaviors and what we've done in the past.
I just think Andy, it goes back to a word you used earlier on. It's about equality. And equality is the true idea of equality is about there is no race, there is no gender, there's no divisions based on what you see or what you are. It's you are based on who you are as a person. And it doesn't matter what you identify with, whether you think you're a helicopter, whether you think you're a man, woman, whatever you want to be. None of that matters, right? No matter what color you are, whatever. True equality doesn't see labels. And my biggest problem is the idea of labels, because, and it's exactly what John Barron says, we are born into a world of labels. Every single thing we do is about labeling something. Even when we get down to football and being a supporter, it's about labeling. Like, think about the idea when we talk about top reds and we talk about bottom reds and we talk about this and we talk about that and this. And they're all labels that we use to put people into a specific type of category. And I truly, 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 truly believe that true equality just sees people for people. And that to me is always going to be what it is, because when you see that, but you cannot get there until you recognize everyone as being equal. Because no matter what you see people as, they will see themselves as what they want to be. And we have to respect that and let them feel that way, right? Mm. And that's where I sit with this type of thing. And the racism thing annoys me, but I would love, because if it's annoying those people who are booing these people taking a knee, then annoy them more. Annoy them more and find something more to...
Well, I do everything possible to exclude people who are against equality out of football. They have no place. They have no place in society. They have no place in football stadiums. So do everything possible to exclude people who are against equality.
I don't know if that's the answer. And I know where you're coming from. I know it's coming from a place of goodness, but I don't know if exclusion of those people is the answer, because all that will happen is you'll create these mini pockets of people who only all see the same way in a racist manner. And they will double down on that and double down on that. The only way, you know, you look at, I know we spend a lot of time on this and I don't want to go into mad stuff, but I was listening to this story about this black guy on death row in the States, and he did a couple of things that ended up getting them talking. Prisoners weren't allowed to talk to each other on death row, and he ended up talking to this guy beside him, and he only found out after it, literally 4 or 5 years, I think it was, of talking to the guy beside him, that your man was a head Klansman, right? And they become friends. They become really close friends. And as your man died, the Klansman was sent to death a number of years later. And he actually spoke about how the guy beside him had become his best friend and how he'd educated him so much in that time around the struggles that black people had had, because he'd never had any black friends. He'd never had any interaction or association with black people. All he had was the rhetoric he was enveloped in. So if you exclude everybody and throw them to the wayside, you're not solve the problem. You take them out of our view, we don't have to hear them booing at a game. They don't go away, and they don't change their rhetoric, and they just breed more of the same in the next.
And I think you're right. It kind of contradicts what I do believe, and it's all about education and not shame. And if you exclude them, you're kind of shaming them.
Realistically,
these people need to be sat down. And look, I think over the next 10 or 20 years, like, we've made huge leaps in all of this in the last kind of 10, 15 years. I think eventually people will look back and wonder, those people in 2021 were really, really thick, and why they were still tolerating this sort of shit. But it is about education. And look, I'm glad you're enjoying the chat there. It does provoke discussion, and that's what we're doing tonight. We're discussing it, and we're hoping that, look, I'm looking at the comments, that nobody's stood up and said that they're racist or anything like that. But if if these discussions do help educate people, then yeah, great, you know what I mean. But what inspired me to bring it up as my topic tonight was that the level of it wasn't just a minority, it was a very very audible sound. It's a 30-40% of the ground type of sound. Easily. You know what I mean? It's actually sickening, you know, really is.
Okay, look, I don't want to belittle a conversation that is a discussion that's well worth had, but I don't also want to spend the whole night doing just the one thing, and I want to move on to football. But I will say something to everyone that's listened there as well, and everyone that's putting in the comments. Pete will be on next week, and we'll probably extend this conversation, because it's worthwhile getting Pete's view on these type of things, because Pete's been one of my longest and closest friends since I was 4 or 5 years of age, and I know what he's gone through. And I've said it earlier on, I've seen the difference in terms of the abuse that he's taken across the years, and it's be worth getting somebody's view that isn't a white person. And I mean that in the nicest way possible, that isn't... Yeah. A 30-40-year-old white male sitting on this, because at least then we can give a different view in terms of what he believes is the right answer and what's the wrong answer, and that's a genuine thing.
You also have to say it's the right or wrong answer in his opinion with his experience. It's like saying John Barnes speaks for all black people, and I saw somebody earlier on say that in the comments. Not everybody will see the comments. I know we see them, but you know, like that. You know, people have his experience and bring his interpretation to the conversation.
Yeah. Like, look, Pete, if you speak to Pete and you say Grays as well, if you listen to their experiences, it does give you an appreciation for stuff that you weren't aware of. Yeah. We grew up in a totally different environment. And I grew up with Gareth Fennell there on the comments myself. He says he's not racist. He hates everyone. And Gareth does hate everyone equally, believe me. He hates everyone and he hates everything. We used to be going playing bowling, and he'd be like, skills, fuck skills. So, I'm not going playing skills, fuck off. So Fennell, in fairness, hates everyone, hates everything. And I love him for it.
I want to move it along, and we'll get back to the world of nonsense, which is football. And Steve, I'm going to go to you for the next topic. Take me away. I'm not going to ruin it for you, because my voice.
Yeah, no worries. I suppose yet again, without being on social media, I miss all the hype that's probably going on around who we should sign, what we need, how we were so far behind this season, and it's going to take 500 million pounds to get us back to win the league next year, you know. So in my opinion, I think tying down our top talent to longer term contracts is actually more important than signing other high quality players this summer. I'm not saying we shouldn't make any signings, but I'm saying if we have a budget and it's a limited budget, I would much rather see us tie five or six of the top players, your Van Dijk, your Alisson, your Fabinho, your Salah, your Mane, whatever it might be, down to long-term contracts. Having seen Gini Wijnaldum walk away this summer, and that's a 40, 50 million pound player if he's got 4 years under his, you know, or 3 years left on a contract. He's gone for free. And I know we've benefited from it in the past, but I do not want to see us in a situation whereby we've got Salah or Mane with a year left and Real picked them up for 30 million and we have to go and try and replace someone like that with a 100 million pound player.
Yeah.
Thoughts? Well, I drink my
mouth. Yeah. Couldn't agree with you more, Steve-O. We slipped up with Emery Can. Not on the level of Gini Wijnaldum. I think Gini Wijnaldum's a far more valuable footballer on the world stage. He's being chased by Barcelona, PSG.
Yeah.
He's the type of player that would have demanded massive money. Even at his age, there would have been people queuing up for to spend 30, 40 million on him. He's been an absolute, like, worldly of a servant for us. You know, he's played more minutes than probably anyone in his 5-6 years at the club. We have slipped up big time in not trying to sort something out agreeable. It's said that when Adam's story will be told, I don't know, I'm not privy to any private information, but I am interested to see what comes of that. But the club did slip up big time in not managing his contract properly, whether he should have been offered a bigger contract a few years back or something that was agreeable.
He was still on his original deal, wasn't he? He was still on the original deal that he signed from Newcastle. Yeah. And, you know, as he gets closer to his end date, of course he starts looking for bigger and bigger money because he knows his importance. You see the reverence in which Klopp holds him and the entire squad.
Yeah, absolutely.
How we've allowed that to slip. We'd have still picked up 30 million from next summer if we kept him.
Yeah. Look, I seen a few wet wipes on Twitter mentioning the comparisons with Milner. Milner's on good money and played less games, and Naby Keita is on good money and played football games, and as wet of a wipe they are, they have made a good point there, because Wijnaldum is, like, productivity wise, you know, like, the basics are you want your footballers that you're paying money to every week to play loads and loads of minutes. And he did achieve that. So it's a strange one. It really is. And I hope the club are looking at themselves. You know, I thought the Emery Can situation would have made them look and wonder, you know, what can we do to prevent this happening in the future? And look, they've allowed it to happen again. But look, I think Wijnaldum was probably part of that next transition phase from Klopp, you know, Mark 1 to Klopp Mark 2, where Wijnaldum goes and, Firmino goes, and there's certain players that move out and they couldn't be seen to offer them contracts because the team does need to change. But I think that was a bad show. I do think that was a bad show, to how that was all handled, you know, in Wijnaldum's case.
Right, yeah. on the Wijnaldum one, where is your position on this? Because you've watched him play over the last 4 or 5 years that he's been with us. He's been an immense servant in terms of, if you think about what's happened since he's come into the club and since he's gone out of the club, you know, there is two camps. Just that we should have renewed him. And there's also, it was the right time for him to go. So where do you sit and having watched him over those years?
I mean, if you think about it, you know, when he's still on that deal when he comes in from Newcastle, yeah? I mean, he wasn't necessarily, you know, the kind of the sort of the top tier player. He might not necessarily ever got to be the top tier player that would command such a wage, but he obviously came in at a certain level in terms of his salary on the scale. If you think about it, there's probably a little bit of recency bias going on here in the fact that he's only really, I would sort of argue, become a real integral part and cog. Plus you add on top the impact that he made in that Barcelona game and a number of other games where he scored important goals, but particularly, you know, Barcelona, where he sort of, he was the catalyst of that comeback in some respects. And I think really they were probably caught in a position where when the negotiations were taking place, they probably thought that whatever it was being talked about in terms from his agent and whatnot at that time, they were probably thinking he probably wasn't that as vital a person in the squad to merit that kind of hike in his salary at that time. So they probably just decided, okay, look, if this ends up being a situation where he walks, it's only gonna be around the same level of impact as when Emre Can walked out the door. It was annoying. It was probably more annoying from a value point of view when Emre Can left because of his age and so on. But they probably looked at what his age would be when his contract come to an end, probably made a calculated decision at that point. And it's only really in the last couple of years and now at the point where he's left, and as Andy said, all the minutes that he plays, his durability, being able to play when everyone else was falling like flies around him. You add all that together and it turns out to be quite a bad look. But I wouldn't lay into the club for getting to this point, because we've had amazing value out of that player over the course of his contract. I think, and the fact that we've parted on, you know, good terms, we'll see what fallout there is from when he reveals his side of the story and what that actually looks like. But I don't think, it's just one of those situations that happens in football. And I think both parties kind of shook hands and move on.
I start to take Steve-O's point on this, and it's the bigger point. If we have,
I'm coming back to you.
If we have, but like if we have to renew, if we have to renew six players' contracts, right, and we have X amount of millions to do this, and also sign a couple of players across the course of this transfer window, given that we also want to extend the Anfield Road end of the stadium, and people forget this part as well, that there's also plans to strategically change the stadium again, then you're going to look at your team and you're going to say, okay, if we have to renew Salah and we have to renew Alisson and we have to renew Fabinho and we have to renew Mane possibly, and we have to let one of our current spine go, then who's the most likely one to go? Because who's the one that's going to, if you think of it, who are your, I hate using the American term, but who's your clutch players? Let's go back to the end of the season when we had to win our last game. It was Mane who comes up with the big goals. Salah has come up with the goals all through the season. We know the impact that Alisson came up with, possibly the biggest goal. And normally wouldn't be saying that about your goalkeeper, but he comes up with the biggest goal of the season. Fabinho's importance between being able to play as an emergency centre-back and he locks, he's possibly the best defensive midfielder in Europe at the moment. Like, if you have to let one of your spine go, and Wijnaldum is the guy that's out of contract at the end of the season, isn't that the one that you say, okay, because you've got Henderson locked down and you know that he can play a similar role. You've signed Thiago to change the shape of our midfield and change the dynamic and how we play in midfield. And in reality, your signings, your younger players are meant to add to that midfield. And it's really, we want to focus. Like, Steve, I would ask you this question. If we were to sign players tomorrow, who where do you want them to sign? And this is, say, when Yaldon was staying, where would you want to sign those players?
I'll tip into Dicko's comment and yours. I suppose, in terms of Ray's comment, to mirror Emre Can's importance to our team when we were a team struggling to make Champions League, and mirror that to Gino Wijnaldum, who's a Champions League winner, a league title winner, and an ever-present. Emre Can suffered with injuries as well, and in no way had the impact in our midfield that Gino Wijnaldum has had over the last 2-3 years. Also, the comments, I'm not picking at your Ray, but I'm saying, in terms of just going back to what you said, you know, recency bias. The same recency bias applies to Xabi Alonso. He had two good seasons at the club. Everybody sees him as a superstar that was picked from under us by Real Madrid when they wanted him. You know, we forget two seasons is a fucking a lifetime in football, you know. And to look at, it's not just about looking at stuff you are interested in. I understand, you know, there's an element. Good lad, Andy. But what I'm saying is to let Gini Wijnaldum go, he's only 30. He's a model professional. He's the, in my opinion, and I could be proved wrong, he's a Milner type. I can see him playing till he's 35, 36. So I think we'd have got the legs out of him, especially if we weren't expecting 35, 38 games a season in the Premier League out of him next season. I'd have let Oxlade-Chamberlain go, Phil, to get onto your question. Oxlade-Chamberlain, who is a tremendous player when fully fit, and that's when, because it happens so rarely. So I'd have seen Curtis Jones come in. There's nothing that Oxlade-Chamberlain can do that Curtis Jones can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So in my opinion, shift Oxlade-Chamberlain to West Ham if they've lost Lingard and they want to bring somebody else. Shift him to West Ham for 20, 25 million. Make our money back or most of it back in terms of what we paid for him. Say, listen, it just didn't work out. Sorry about that. Keep Genie around. Add one more midfielder to the team if that's what you want to do. And shift, if you want to shift Naby as well, fair enough. But talking about him, Genie wanting a massive pay increase, it's completely justified because he came in as a player from Newcastle who was an attacking midfielder. We didn't know what he was going to be. I don't know what he was on, but I can only assume he was on 80 or 90 grand, something like that. He's 100, and people are talking about him, oh, he's doubled his wages. Yes, you fucking right he has. Why wouldn't he? You know, because they haven't had to pay a fee for him. And he's 150 grand a week player all day long if we went to get him somewhere else. If somebody turned around to us and said, oh, you can get Gini Wijnaldum for 30 million, we'd all be jizzing our pants as Liverpool fans, having looked at him play that way for City or play that way for Bayern or whoever else for the last three seasons. We'd be slapping our hands at 30 million and paying him 150 grand a week. And we'd be saying, what a fucking player to get in our squad. Mm. And we've let him walk out and walk for free. And that's that. Football happens. Things happen in the background. We'll never know what it was. Even if Genie gives his story, we'll never know what the club's rationale was because they don't talk about that. You know, it's done now. I'm just disappointed. I'm not castigating the club. I don't care enough about one individual player, regardless of who that player is, to castigate the club for anything. It's just football. It's just a game. It's meant to be enjoyable. So don't get yourself too worked up. But, you know, it is disappointing to see him go for free when we're now going to probably, you know, have to go out and replace him.
I think, just to come back, I think probably the point at which he would have, the logical point, and once you go past that point, it means he's probably gonna cash in on a free transfer. It's probably that season after we've won the European Cup. But you know, who knows what sort of figures were being discussed at that point? I mean, yeah. The other thing you raise about is you know his stock would have been high at that stage. So you know they probably would have been looking at paying fairly top whack in terms of wages, and obviously they shied away from that. I would have thought. The other point, there's a good few people, there's a good few out there who think that in terms of his durability and, you know, his legs, you know, he's starting to run in treacle a little bit. And actually, had we have held on to him for another two or three years, he would have kind of fallen off a Firmino type of cliff over the next season or two. And I'm not necessarily an advocate of that, but there's plenty of people who have that view, and
I get that, Ray. But he shouldn't have had to play the amount of games he played this season, as an example. You know, yeah. Fabinho and Henderson being pulled out of the midfield, Naby and Ox being injured for so much of the season,
And
there was no let up for him. You know, no. So of course he's going to show fatigue, but he's a player that if we're playing 55 games a season, should be playing 30, 35 of them. And he will look fresh as a daisy for the next two or three years, barring a major injury. In my opinion, he'll look fresh as a daisy if you're playing him 60% of the games. You know what I mean? If you're playing him 95% of the games, then of course after 3 years of that, he's going to look fatigued. But nothing that a reduction in game time next year wouldn't have seen him looking sharp in the games. And people don't talk enough about his technicality as a footballer. You know what I mean? Like, he's superb on the ball. His ability to work in tight spaces, his strength, his energy, all of those things are really, really hard to replace. And we have to go out now and find a player, or hope that one of our players steps into that mold when he was already there. And that's the disappointing bit, you know?
I think the thing about Gini Wijnaldum was his effectiveness was probably best viewed when you were actually at the game and when you were in the stadium. Yeah. You'd see what he would do. He didn't get the plaudits because, in general, from watching it from your sofa and whatnot, your armchair, you didn't actually get what he was doing for the team on a consistent basis. And the other barometer of it for me, very rarely, I can't think of any occasion where I can remember fans getting at a game, fans getting on Genie's back, and that says a lot for me. You know, people be very quick to jump on people's backs if they're having a bad game or if they're having a bad period. Very, very rarely would you hear fans around you getting on Gini Wijnaldum's back.
Yeah,
game. Oh, he's always busy. Always gave it everything for the short. And look, it's a minimum requirement, but it's something that a lot of players fall short of. And he came into Liverpool, and the example he set from the beginning to the end now was second to none. Always gave everything for the short. And you know, I'll never forget that. He goes down in a legend status for me. You know,
Andy is Andy, and I want to. Sorry, Steve. I just want to ask Andy this question because I think it's a valid one. Is he not the perfect example of a modern day footballer, where you get 5 years of his full contract, absolute balls in terms of what he's delivered for the club, and then moves on somewhere else? Because if you think the impact he has on your accounts and everything like that is all positive. So even when he moves on, we'll make a profit on that because we amortize his contract. We pay him.
Stop.
No, Steve, if you want to get into it.
But this isn't accountancy. Come on. You know what I mean?
Sorry, I don't really understand that point. Like if they had extended his contract a couple of years ago with a view to sell now and got 20, 30 million, then I would have said, yeah, that was clever, you know.
Do you not think it's the best you're gonna get out is a player for 5 years at your club? In the modern game, there's very few players that are gonna spend 10 years at a club.
That's the difference, isn't it? We didn't
have
5 years out of him. We could have tied him down to another deal and got rid of him in a year's time. If his legs were gone or whatever else, we could have tied him down to another deal, given him the money he wanted and shifted him for 20 or 25 or 30 million.
But Steve, we've done this, and you know, you've been doing this for the last couple of years, and we've gotten out of doing this a bit. We've been able to offload players for good money. So it's not like we're constantly making this where we're not offloading players for good money. This is one of the few occasions. And the fact that we mentioned Emre Can, because it's probably the last time that this type of thing has happened to us. Normally we have contracts signed up. Normally we have these things signed up. And if the club has decided to go this way, and I'm going to be straight here, the club has rarely got anything wrong in the transfer market outside of Keita and Chamberlain over the last...
Just on something Danny Emery said, you don't get 30 million for a 30-year-old. We paid 20 million for a 29. We paid 20 million.
So he's right then.
Yeah, but no, we paid Thiago
25.
We paid 20 million. He was in the last year of his contract. Thiago with 3 years or 4 years left in his contract was not a 20 million pound player. And that's the fact of it. This summer, Thiago would have been free. Mm. And that's why Bayern were happy to take 20 million for him last summer. And that's my point. If the club weren't going to get a deal over the line, they should have sold Gini the year before and got a fee for him. You know, and it's just, I get where you're coming from. 5 years at a club is superb going and all of those things. I get all of that. It was disappointing, but the club have their reasons.
I get you. And the bit that's annoyed me out of this whole thing is that when Wijnaldum bit about that, the truth will come out. In reality, I wish him on his way, and if the club decided not to renew him, I wish him all the best wherever he is once we don't meet him in a Champions League final, let's say, because he's gone to PSG. He's not gone to another club in the league. I just hate seeing that sort of, well, I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't give a shit about your truth, mate. And I'm going to be straight about you. I don't care about, because it just looks bitter and it looks like sour grapes that your contract, you didn't get the 150 or 200 grand that you wanted out of the club. because it looks like that your real move, if we want to get into that, the real move, he wanted to go to Barca, that hasn't planned out, and he's ended up at PSG. And don't get me wrong, it looks like he's going to get monster wages at PSG, and fair play to him. But like,
listen, if he wanted to move on and wanted a new challenge, that's totally fair.
Yeah,
5 years, no player has to stay beyond their contract. That's all cool. If it was the player's decision, but all through the year, he kept on saying, I'm leaving it with the club, it's in their hands. So it sounded, the sound bites were that he wanted to stick around, and he'd put it to the club what he wanted, and they weren't willing to match that. As someone just said there, he's gone, move on. You know, I do get that. We spend a lot of time on a more important topic before this. If you want to move on to the next one, that's
so, just flip this, because I think
how many topics have we got left? It's like 12, 7.
But I actually want to ask, because it's the flip of this topic, because it's an interesting one, right? Because very rarely free transfers work out very well. So from a Liverpool perspective, who in your head is the best free transfer we've ever made? Because this is the other side. We're always worried about these free transfers going out the door, right?
Yeah.
Chan has done very little since he left Liverpool. He achieved more at Liverpool than he has, say, anywhere else that he's gone to. Couldn't get it looking at Juve, gone to Borussia Dortmund, and he haven't done much since he went there. So my point is, free transfers in real terms, who's the best we've made? And I think, Andy, I know where you were going to go, but I want to see if we have any weird ones that we're going to throw in.
James Milner's the obvious one.
Milner, just for professionalism, what he brought, how he brought on that squad. Like, he had a massive impact along with Hendo in terms of the professionalism and the standards. The man, yeah. You hear all those players around him saying he's 10 years older than them and he still fucking outruns them. He still, you know, so that's infectious in a squad. And I think for that reason, as much as his impact in the first 2 or 3 years, but just his ability to be part of that team and create that older head around the dressing room and whatever else, I think, yeah.
Someone, you know, was important at that time. He brought someone in who'd won the league and we were chasing the Holy Grail. And, you know, that really was, I think, a big ingredient. I mean, as Steve-O says, his professionalism, the way he handles himself, the fact that he is clearly, you know, going to make it way into his sort of into his late 30s and still be playing at a decent level. And that's testament to how he's looked after himself. And, you know, he must be someone the younger players look up to now. I mean, you've seen him, didn't you, when he stuck around to watch the effectively the under 23s playing in the cup game. You know, it's that type of,
and he's roaring at them from the sideline. He's coaching them basically in the ground. You know,
And I can only imagine what sort of influence he's having now. That obviously the amalgamation of the training facility in Kirby, and I've no doubt that they'll be utilising them over the next few years to help in the development of those young players and drill it into them. And he's a role model essentially. I think, you know, they're the sort of the intangibles that we won't see on a date, you know, we won't see it, but on a day-to-day basis it's making a massive impact inside the club, and hopefully he will have some sort of coaching role at the club, you know, when he decides it's time. I really hope he doesn't sort of slide off into the Championship or something like that, and he just decides to go out at the kind of, you know, or at the sort of top level and go into a coaching role with us, because I think even then he can continue to make an impact. I mean, I was looking, and I knew this with this being the topic that was aligned to me on the tweet earlier when I found out what was going on. I mean,
so basically Phil decided the topic and just gave it to you. Is that how it worked, Ray?
No, I don't know. But anyway, the one that stuck out to me, because it was so like kind of random, even feels more random when you look at it now and you think about what Sam Allardyce has become down the years as well. But JJ Okocha going to Bolton on a free back when it happened was just like, it's just madness when you think about it. I mean, the impact that fella had, the excitement that he brought, you know, he was a big profile signing, and you know, going to Bolton on a free transfer. Now I'm sure there might have been a bit of other type of money exchanging behind the scenes. But yeah, I mean, JJ Okocha, I mean, Michael Ballack was another one, you know, for, yeah, for
Ballack
Chelsea.
Was huge, wasn't he? Like, at the time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The two that stand out for me is Lewandowski from Borussia Dortmund to Bayern Munich, considering he's gone on to win a treble and whatever he does. And but lads, Pirlo from AC Milan to Juventus. Yeah. That'd
being
be like
this is a Gini Wijnaldum one, isn't it? He got told he didn't have the legs for Milan anymore and went to run the fucking show in Juve for another five seasons?
And Italy as well. It's like the Pirlo one always jumps out at me going, that would be like, you know, it's saying to Pogba, now we've had enough of you now. And Klopp going, Jesus, I would have loved him for ages. I'll just take him and just stick him into midfield and let him run
Pogba
away.
Pogba isn't half the player what Pirlo was for AC Milan, if you think about it. Like, Pirlo was, I'm trying to think of who it's like, you know what I mean? He was just exceptional for AC Milan, and for them to just go, now off you go. Thanks very much, Andres, but we've had enough.
The lads put in a great shout, Figo.
Where was he? What?
But I thought Figo was bought, wasn't he, from Barcelona to Real Madrid?
He was 35 million quid. He was world record or close to world record signing at the time.
Because didn't Real Madrid have to pay his buyout clause? It was one of the first buyout clauses that happened.
Yeah, there was a claim around him being able to leave free transfer, but he wasn't able to. It cost a lot of money from my memory. To be fair, McAllister, if we're talking about Liverpool, McAllister and Marcus Babbel are two great shouts. Had Marcus Babbel not been struck down by the illness he got, he'd be referred to as a club legend. He was a phenomenal player for us. And Gary McAllister, yet again, he's still kind of seen, because of 2002, you know, 2001-02, he's seen as that sort of, he is seen as a legend. But if we'd got him 2 or 3 years earlier, you know, we really could have. He's the sort of player that could have had a difference on whether you win a league or not.
Yeah, I think Gary Mackey, like, he was amazing, and the Everton goal, kind of was the tip for him. But he was, up to that, he was kind of a bit of a cult hero. Most of his other impacts were kind of penalties and stuff like that. But Milner has been involved in so much, and he's been involved on and off the pitch of bringing young players on as well. And we've seen him in warm-ups. We've seen him taking the captain's armband. Like, he's been a real integral part of everything that's happened under Klopp. And I don't think I'm exaggerating here. If Klopp could reincarnate a player and bring him through from the very beginning to spend his whole career at Liverpool, it'd be another James Milner.
Mbappe, oh, yeah, sorry. I think people forget probably the impact that Gary Mack had on a young Steven Gerrard, you know. And you're talking about Milner there in terms of how he brings on the players around him and the impact he has, etc. But I think Gerrard obviously would have seen an awful lot around the professionalism, around the ability, how to handle yourself on a pitch, all those sort of things have an impact.
I just think it's mad that, like, we talk about this, and as much as people won't get it, but Matip was an incredible free signing. Since he signed to the club, we've gone to two Champions League finals, won a Champions League and won a league. And the year that he's missed most of his games, we struggled to get over the line to get into the Champions League. Yeah. Honestly, he's a smashing player. And Adrian, what a fella. Turns up, first game in, he wins the Super Cup. Next couple of games in, he gets us to win a league, and then after that, he wins a World Club Championship. Like, they're big. Doesn't need them. He inspires the team to score more goals. The one thing about Adrian is, when he's in goal, he inspires you to score more goals.
He has no fucking choice.
But true, Matip, if you took away the recency bias of the last season that went on, and possibly half the previous season where we win the league, right? Matip is one of the best performing players we've signed on a free transfer, because his actual level when he gets on a football pitch is literally top in terms of where he goes.
If he wasn't made of Ticketies, he'd be an absolutely smashing player. But he's
phenomenal. And he has been.
He gets damp and he just crumbles.
Yeah, no. And
I love this comment. Matip is quality in the five games he plays per season,
which is great. But I guarantee, if I mention another name, the person will say, it will be bashing out some stats to prove that he's the best player per minutes on a pitch, when actually Matip is. Anyway, but the my thing is, I genuinely, I just think from our point of view, it's very hard to argue around Milner, because, again, similar to the Matip thing, look at Milner. Milner comes into the team, and since Milner's arrived, we just keep qualifying for the Champions League. We went nearly 10 years not qualifying for the Champions League. Milner arrives, and the mentality in the squad starts to change as soon as he arrives. Not under Rodgers, but as soon as Klopp comes in. Klopp identifies him as a leader of men,
yeah.
Right? And whether people like it or not, if Klopp is telling you that this fella is an example and a leader of men, that just shows you what he rates that player as. And if you don't believe what Klopp says, then you are saying that Klopp's a gimp, right? Yeah. And that's the basic, that's a basic point here. You can dress it up and trying to make fancy numbers and stats and the whole up. You're saying that Klopp hasn't the breeze what he's doing, and actually Jordan, I'm smarter than you.
4 years ago, when everybody wanted him out of the team, and you know, he basically typifies absolutely everything that
Even now, Steve-O, Henderson isn't even close to the spot.
My worms after an hour and 15 minutes online. So let's not go there.
Milner is the type of player that inspires others. You know what I mean? You look at him warming up, especially if you're at the game, he's constantly talking to the other players. Like, you know that he's a good influence around the ground. He loves his football. He takes it very seriously. Never fucking got involved in drinking. And, you know, he's always been just that absolute pro, you know. And look, for me, he's the absolute, you know, the best free transfer we've ever had, 100%.
Yeah, I agree.
What was the... Oh, yeah, so that was...
Ray's at the scene of funny comment. Go on.
Go on, Ray.
Well, Jason Leonard, self-professed leader of men. That made me...
There we go. I think the last topic was mine, and I wanted to lead on to this, and I sort of leads us on from this, because I opened up the phone the other day, and I put it on, and I seen somebody giving out. Sorry, no, were they giving out, or were they?
You opened up the phone. Do you have one of those flip phones?
Yeah, I've one of those Samsung flip phones that has like multiple screens and everything. It turns into a joint computer. It turns into when you do it.
But
a hot point phone. but they open it up, and you're there looking at it, and they're going, is this real? Is this stuff real? Because their argument was that we should have given Mignolet a new contract because he played so many minutes on the pitch. The same people have been arguing for the best part of 2 years that Naby Keita is the best player we have in the squad. If you just realise that your minutes don't matter on the pitch. So you just, I started going, thinking about this and thinking about the impact that these people have on people's lives. And even looking through comments, looking at the subconscious impact that people have on these people's lives. And in reality, it's like, we feed into it, is that this is the loudest voice stuff. This is like basically who can come up with the craziest shout that has some sort of fingerprints in reality that people can buy into and jump on top of. And it goes back to all the stuff we talked about earlier on. It's all about what part of reality do you want to believe? And Andy, we've had these conversations about reality before, right? And it's like... it's so impossible for people to say, and I've seen comments in here about that we're all super lefties now because of what we said, and it's like,
how is that? I don't even. I threw a comment up earlier. I was hoping someone else would jump on. I don't even know what that means. You know what I mean? Like we're talking about equality, weren't we? Not leftism or fucking right wing.
But like, I'm honest about this. I will go on because I know what people are like, because I know what people who consume social media are like. There was a time going back 10 years, I actually bought into this and thought this is great and the whole lot, right? And isn't it great that people communicate? And then I realized within about 2 years that no, the people that are on here, you have these people who read it and consume it and think it's important. And then you have these people who throw anything in there and try to be the loudest people possible and get the people who are reading over here to then go and follow them and become part of their little cult, right? So, and I look at this, and it's all about the loudest voice. It's literally who can say the maddest stuff ever to get the most likes and follows, and then you bury yourself into a group, a cult, a clique, a group, and you can't come back out of it. It's so hard in social media these days to actually have a grey view and be able to say, do you know what, like Steve, what you did earlier on, to say, do you know what, I said something a while back and I was wrong. And I'm just talking about in general. It's like I had this opinion about a player, and do you know what, I was wrong. When Milner signed for us at first, I used to call him Antelope Hoofs. And he ran around with tins of beans on his feet. And Paul Brennan, when he was still alive, God rest his soul, and he had them on, and he made up pictures of Milner running around with Heinz beans on his feet and everything like that. And you know what? Milner's a brilliant player for us. Yeah. And once he learned...
To be fair to Steve-O, he's very rarely wrong. I mean, I remember, you know, Steve-O was very much of the Morata. and I have to say, I don't know if anyone watched the Spain Portugal international the other day when Morata ran clean through on goal and absolutely walloped it onto the crossbar.
I may have got that one wrong. I don't even remember who was it that I was putting Morata against
Bobby
Firmino.
He's still better than Firmino. Anyway, I think one of the big problems is that people struggle to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
You have to have an opinion one way or the other. And I definitely was in that camp for a long, long time. And I probably still am in certain ways. But the ability to just say, I don't know, or I haven't thought about it enough, or I haven't looked into that enough.
I haven't watched that league. I haven't watched that player.
Yeah, no idea who you're talking about.
I don't fucking know.
I haven't got a fucking clue. Yeah. And to be able to say that is difficult for a lot of people because we're in a culture where the first person, it's not even the loudest voice sometimes. Sometimes it's just the first person out with the information. Mm. The one that matters most. And therefore, you have to have an opinion on, you know, it could come out, we're going to sign fucking Xinjiang Zhoui from fucking wherever tomorrow, and someone will say they've seen him and he's great and it's this, that, and the other. Or we're going to sign fucking Joey Smith off fucking Cork City or whoever. Someone will have an opinion on what they're like as a person.
He's a good player, Joey Smith off Cork.
Yeah. You watched them last up in Paris.
The Cork Rovers.
You and Brian Kerr, arm in arm.
I don't know. What are you trying to say, Phil? I'm still lost on this topic.
All I know is Phil's getting lower and lower in the screen every
day. Just the lights going out
here. Deeper and deeper into that fridge. Eventually, he's got to be in the freezer.
No, it's what Andy. What I'm saying to you is essentially with the loudest voice at the moment, even when it comes to the Wijnaldum stuff, they were trying to prove that we should have given him a contract because he played more minutes. The same people who are saying this were the ones 4 months ago were saying we have to get rid of Wijnaldum because even though he plays all the minutes, I could name them, but I'm not because I don't want to give them airtime. And I honestly don't, because it's like when you see people retweeting stuff or liking stuff on Facebook or whatever they do on Instagram when they press the heart button or they press the something button, whatever it is, right? Look, I'm getting into my 40s, so I'm allowed to be fucking agnostic as to what you press on shit at this stage. I just want... well into it, like, but my point to Andy is that, like,
getting into my 40s, I was at your 40th about 5 years ago.
I'm gonna trigger the comments now because I got vaccinated today. Wait, you see what happens when I say that, right? Yeah. They're gonna say that but I will say, since I got vaccinated, my 5G signal is amazing, right? So it's just the best you could have.
I remember Phil's 40 did very well, it was organized on Bebo.
And they left comments on MySpace.
He sent his invites out in the post.
I had to print them off and put them in envelopes. But honestly, this is what I'm saying, Andy. At the moment, because the the loudest voices that are out there, they ran out of things to say. So their model army at the moment was Keita for a long time, and obviously we've seen what's happened there.
I'm going to pop off for a second. I'll be back.
Go, do a wee-wee. And
you got a bit loud, didn't you?
Yeah. I know. I just doing this watch. That's it. But yeah.
He's on the Joe Walsh.
My point to you, Andy, was that when we get onto this loudest voice idea, is that these people, even themselves, as much as they want to be as serious and be factual and be statistically on point about what they want to say and what they want to believe, it's actually all bollocks, because they would use anything to, they won't come out and say the words they want to say. I know better than Klopp. Okay. That's what they really want to say. I know better than Klopp because I've done this, and I pretend to watch this league and I pretend to do this. Okay. Like, genuinely.
Yeah.
And this is where we are. And the louder I speak and say things that are vaguely around factual basis, the more people that can buy into this idea that I'm projecting at this stage. And that's what I'm trying to get to on this particular end. The Wijnaldum thing was a perfect example of it, because they've slagged him off for 4 years. And as soon as he decides he's off, he's actually the best midfielder and we should stick with him.
Yeah. I don't know. I think, without being given a spoiler here, have anyone watched Dark? Have you watched Dark?
On Netflix. Yeah.
You have? Dick, have you watched Dark?
Which one? Is this the dubbed one, is it?
Yeah.
In German.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. Sorry. It's like Twitter is Dark to me. Sometimes you go onto Twitter and it's not the same reality as where I'm living, anyway, you know. And like, I try and be open enough, I don't block accounts really. I kind of delve into those rabbit holes, whether it's FSG out or you name it. I want to learn and I want to see what's going on. But the reality that other people are living on Twitter is so far removed from what I am, anyway. So I think there's people logged in to Twitter from the other dark worlds. Do you know what I mean? I think that we are, you know, in one dark universe and somebody else is in another dark. And like, all of this shit makes sense to them, because they really do argue these points well, like that they're throwing up stats, they're fucking, and like, you're going, Jesus, they really believe in this. They're not taking a piss here at all. Like, this is the reality they're living. And Twitter, for a lot of football fans, is where you're kind of getting your information. It's where you're getting your media. It's where you're getting your opinions. It's where you're forming opinions. And when you talk about social media, it really is Twitter, Phil, isn't it? It's not like we don't really do football chat on Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat, man.
If you're talking about general life, if you're not just talking about football,
it's kind of employees.
Cesspit.
Oh my god,
and Instagram is just narcissism. Like it's just everybody showing only pictures of the perfect shot of everything in their life, rather than, you know. So it's every element of social media has its own fucking pit of despair that you fall into, you know what I mean? I'm saying that as someone who actively removed himself from all of them, you know what I mean? And
I look at it today, and I've got kids, and I look at like TikTok, right? And I'm into the stage of my life where, and it's great, because like 10 years ago I would have been all over every social media and thinking it's amazing and look at all this, it's amazing. And now I'm at the stage where I would have looked at my dad about 25, 30 years ago, before social media existed, and he's looking at me talking about, what was that team call or team call that you used to have on teletext?
Club call.
And he'd be like, what the fuck do you even care about who was signed? When they're signed, they'll be in the newspaper. That's all you need to see, right? That's all that matters to you. Yeah. And now it's like, I'm saying, oh yeah, we're signing such and such. What? Who? And like, and now I'm at the stage of my life, and it's gone beyond that. They don't even care about news. They only care about doing hand signals that mean nothing at stuff, and then doing, and it's just bizarre. It's like I'm sitting there, and it's like my kids have same fightus as dance, and they're going, "What are you doing?" Like, And it's like, okay, that was in the 90s. That was great. Like, do you know what I mean? But there was a whole other reason I'm never going to tell you about, but there was a reason for it. I wasn't standing in front of a phone going.
Now what we have is three people wondering what Bill is talking about.
three people wondering. I'd love to know what Bill's talking about.
That was not a fucking clue. No.
One thing I'd be intrigued about is how these people would actually make these arguments stand up if they were sat in one of the pubs outside Anfield with your average home fan.
This is like, what I'm saying.
They'd be shot down within 5 minutes.
This is my point. Right. Stand up. This is my point. They're going to a different Anfield to us. If you've watched Dark, they're going to a different Anfield. And they think we're the mad bastards. Like they're saying in their head, imagine him going into the park or into the Arkans and raising this point. They're being fucking shot down. They're lunatics. And they're in there like, and there's Kate the Banners everywhere or whatever. Like, it's a totally different.
Yeah, Mavia was here.
Yeah. It's a parallel universe, absolute. Like, and everybody's in a pub going, Henderson's a joke, and Milner's fucking this, and blah blah blah. Like,
Klopp's a fraud.
Yeah, I actually do think these other Dark Universe Twitter accounts like do believe in what they're saying.
Web, Andy, is it?
Well, I'm just calling it the Dark Universe. But like they do.
Yeah,
they're convinced.
Intro.
They're convinced. Like, you know, they're crawling, and one day they might crawl into the one we're in, and then they're in the articles of the world we're experiencing, and then they realize that Henderson's actually a good player. Nabi K that doesn't play football for us and all that shit, like I don't know.
And then right
left it's just a theory. Don't hang your hat on it. Like it's but watch the fucking series on Dark and make you know see what you think because I think that's what could be going on. Because people do seem very convinced about their opinions.
I can't wait until Dark meets Liverpool TikTok. Like that's it's the because, next.
Well, Andy, it's because you can never back down on Twitter. That's what it is. You can never back down on Twitter, and because there's always somebody. If you change your opinion, there's always somebody to pull up a screenshot of what you said 2.5 years ago and say you're talking bollocks. Because in Twitter, you're not allowed to change your opinion. You're not allowed to educate yourself. You're not allowed to have a difference of opinion to even one you had yourself. Never mind with somebody else. 2 years ago, you know what I mean, and that's the reality.
I will put this comment up.
Let's say it is a bank holiday Monday in Ireland.
Every time I got to put this one up, there we go. The Berenstain Bears live in the parallel universe on the other side of Phil's fridge. This is the whole Dark Universe we're talking about.
Narnia, that's your fridge, Narnia.
Narnia, I can go in. Yeah. I'm going into my fridge for sleep after this, so it's roll me back out on Monday. Right, I think that's been a great conversation. I want to thank everyone in the comments.
Jason Leonard said first comment read out in 7 months. Well, he's had two in one show, so there you go.
Listen, you know, it's like a bus. You wait for one to come along and then three come along. So if you had a third comment, then we would have thrown that up towards the end. But he didn't because he's basically exhausted
out on the first two. He said he's lost as well.
He's gone off the Twitter now to put that up and just and his Dark Universe and he's loving it as it goes. Listen, this has been the podcast. This has been the forum tonight. Before we go, I want to mention Sienna Steps. I hope you've been with us all tonight. But like the appeal goes on. We have all the merchandise on the website. We have the Eventbrite going on for doing a 5K in terms of what's there. Please, if you can, do the Eventbrite. It's whatever it is to do it. Get your kids out, make them run it, get your granny out, get them out in a wheelchair, get them out, whatever you have. You have to push the bed around the green. I don't care. Just do it. It's such a good cause. And that's the most important thing I can say to you. It doesn't matter about anything else we've talked about tonight. This is a child who has an opportunity to get a better life for herself, and please help support this cause that's out there. There'll be loads of shows on during the week. We will keep going, even though we're into the quiet season at this stage. I want to thank, of course, Ray Dickinson, our resident scouser down below. See, Ray was over this side here a few minutes ago, but Steve went off.
I didn't even go to the jacks. I just went to get my charger because the fucking pod went on that long that I just came in with my laptop and no charger, and the Mac ran out of battery.
So there's nothing worse when the Mac runs out of battery. But over on this side here, of course, is Andy. But he was actually over this side. See this side here, but then he moved over to this side in the Dark Universe, but he's gone back to this side again. So that's the most important thing that you can go with. And of course, this has been Ireland on a Bank Holiday Monday night. I hope you've enjoyed yourself. I want to thank you all for joining in. And thanks for all the comments. We'll see you again next week. And go safe with yourselves along the roads. Good morning, and Bohala.
Go safe with yourself.
On the roads.
On the roads. On the roads. On the pathways. Or whatever dark.
It's marketing, Clontarf.
Yeah.
Come on, is it your birthday? Sports Social Podcast Network.